This is the Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage show by Mark Helm. Nothing Mark shares with you guarantees your success in the self-storage business. This is for informational purposes only. There are no calls to action and nothing said or implied is a call for investment money into self-storage or any other asset class. You are responsible for your success in the self-storage business or any endeavor in life. Enjoy the show, and here is Mark Helm.
This is Mark Helm, author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage and the creator of the Quick Start Academy. And welcome to episode 480. Boy, it's a lot of episodes. Today we're going to do something kind of different. I'm going to introduce you to Rich. Rich is one of the people in our inner circle community. And I think you'll find Rich a very interesting and smart person. He's developed a niche that's a little bit different inside the self-storage business, taking his skill sets and applying them in such a way that helps other people and gives him an opportunity to partner and support others and be in deals. So let me share what I found interesting was his super strength is his ability to research and systematize processes that make farming for self-storage, hunting for opportunities, very systematic and very effective. I'd be interested to know what you think. At the end of watching this interview, if you're interested in reaching out to Rich, I'm sure he'll leave some contact information for you. If nothing else, you'll be able to see how you can organize yourself to do something similar to what he's doing. Let me introduce you to Rich.
So welcome, everyone. I would like to introduce you to Rich. Rich is a member of our inner circle. And before we dive too deep into what Rich is doing and kind of what his super skills are, Rich, introduce yourself a little bit about your background, how we met, and what you're up to today.
Sure. My name is Richard Porter, and I live in Connecticut now. I just moved up 2 months ago from Florida. Mark and I met in 2014 or so, and I got diverted into and about self-storage, and I got diverted into stocks. I was researching stocks for about 5 years, and then I came back to self-storage in 2017. And 2020, I started heavily with Mark, and now we've been together for a couple years.
What has been real interesting is how Rich can organize himself and what he does into processes, document those processes, and become very efficient at it. So, for example, today a lot of people, particularly in our inner circle group, are having a challenge of a time finding existing self-storage that actually works for the kind of returns of small investors we need. So many of the people are doing their, you know, ground up construction or their own or doing it themselves. And show, if you'd be willing to share kind of your process for finding land and then what you present to people and that type of thing. Would you be willing
Sure.
to show that?
Yeah, sure. To piggyback on what you just said, I used to be an analyst. So I would actually, a program analyst, I would actually go into an office, see what they were doing manually, write everything down, and then 2 weeks later, come back with software for them to be able to automate everything. That's where I got the background for documenting and creating systems, if you will. Sure, let me share. And I'll start by describing how I find land. All right, so we're going to go to Radius Plus. That's normally where I start. And you see Radius Plus. This is where I live. I'm in Connecticut. We're in Connecticut right now. Here's Connecticut. And just picking a 3 mile radius. So the first thing I do is for land or and conversions, LoopNet and Crexie are the two sources that I go to for looking at. We're just doing land, let's say Connecticut, and I have a filter. And I just want commercial or industrial. That's all I want. And I want to minimize my time with this. So I put 3 acres. No, wait, Is this square footage? No, I don't want that. I want acres. 3 acres to 15, for example. And I take all this off because I don't, all I want is what's on market. And then I showing one. Let's go to LoopNet. All right. And then filter, same thing. Land available. Buildings available. 3 to 15. Search. There. Okay. So I would click it. Click it, click it, and making a new page for each one. And then I would go through, I have 50 pages up there. I go through each page. I look at the zoning. I look at the square footage. The zoning is a big deal, but I take care of that later when I start. And then I read the description. And then I go to Radius Plus and I put the address in. So I put this address in Radius. I first go here and look at it from a bird's eye view. And there it is, right here, the land. Right there next to Big Y. Point is that I bring this here, I bring the address here into Radius. And then I look at the stats. The reason I go here first is to see the roadway and see what's next to it and see if it's even feasible to, if it has a lot of swampland or whatever. And then I go to Radius. If it passes that view, I go to Radius and I look at the per capita 8.1. That's doable. And then I look at the population, the medium household income for Connecticut. Is this Connecticut? Yeah, it's $100, so that works. And then I go, after I get the population and medium household income, I go to the competition and I see what the rents are, average, basically. Here it is. For a 10 by 10, it's 11, 111, and a 109, that's a little low for Connecticut, but I would continue to research it. The next thing would be the traffic. Each state has its own traffic. I go into the traffic, put the address, and it brings me right to the property. You got 14,000 cars going by a day, 15,000 roughly, and that works. And this even gives me a better view of the wetlands and stuff. There's some stuff right there you would have. So you may only have so many. If there's 8 acres, I think it was 8 acres. Yeah, 8.5 acres. You may only have 5 acres to actually build on because of that water right there. After a while, you get used to that, and then you go to FEMA and you put the address in there, and it comes up and shows you no wetlands from FEMA's point of view, but there's probably wetlands back there. But like I said, you have to. That's what I do for every property, and I determine if it's feasible for traffic count. If it's not flooding, if it's got all the criteria for rents, and if it has the per capita and a population of 10,000 or more, and medium household income. I prefer the medium household income to be higher than what the state average is, and like that. That's for land. Conversions, like I said, are a little different. You have to go through the building. You have to, I go to LoopNet and instead of land, and that's a different animal. I would actually put office, industrial, retail, shopping centers, not multifamily, specialty, healthcare, hospitality, sports, and that's it. I'd put all that in and then have the filter. Okay, so exclude pending. Get rid of auctions, and then I go to building size. I want at least 20,000, 10,000, or 20, depending on the acreage. That's why it's a little challenging, and you have to go through it all. Because if there's extra acreage, if there's 10 acres and there's only 10,000 square feet of self of a box, I could expand. That's why this conversions are a lot more heavy labor. You have to do a lot more work for to find a conversion than land because of the fact of the size of the building and the size of the lot, the acreage of the lot can determine the value, not just the building. So just let's say 10,000 and maximum 80,000, because land 2 acres to 15. That sounds good. Boom, 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 and then search. And there's your properties. Each one, again, let me get rid of these land up here. And each one I would be clicking on. Well, first off, I'd be looking at it to determine 700,000 for 14. It doesn't tell me the acreage. Sometimes it does, but if it doesn't, I have to click on it to see it. And then I keep on clicking on all these, just like I did the land. And now I go into it and I look, 2.2 acres, and it's only got 14,000 rentable square feet. That doesn't work. I'm used to the numbers enough to know that I need at least 30,000 square feet with 2 acres. But if there was 5 acres, it might work. But this doesn't work, so I keep on looking. This one has a rentable area, 11,000 square feet and 16 foot. That's another thing. 17 feet or higher roof ceiling height, I can do 2 stories. Now, this has 5 acres, so 1.7 million. If this was 17 feet, this 5 acres could possibly work, because you'd get 22 here and you'd have 3 acres to build. So this is a candidate. This would be what I would be looking for. But now that I know that, I take the address. I do the same thing I did with land. I go here, take a look at it. Where is it in general? And there it is. There's your land. So this is possible. And look at the traffic you got. You got good possibilities. Let's look at the, now we go into radius plus. Come on, you know. There we go. Now we go into radius plus, and this looks great. Not a whole bunch of REITs around. Oh, it's a 9.1. So that means low population. There it is. It's less than 10,000. I would not even look at this any further because it's less than 10,000. But this is just an example. We're going to continue on. It's the medium household income is less than 100, which that's the standard for Connecticut. That's another red flag. So you got less than, and then you got the medium household income less. Let's see what the rents are. The rents, there's 3 in the 3 mile radius. That's what we're in. So let's see what the average is. 189 and 136. So
Good
the rents are
rents.
decent. Yeah, they're decent. But again, the population is low, and I'd be passing this, but we're going to use this as a demonstration. We're going to continue on to show you all the steps that I do for conversion. Boom. There's the building. There's your land right there. A lot of it's already cut down. You've got 4,000 here, 6,000 there, 5,000 there, and 2,000 there. So you're looking at 6, 8, 10, around 10,000 traffic going by. Let's see if it's going to get any flood. Flood is so incredibly helpful, because I've had in Florida, especially, 50% of the properties are in flood zones. Nothing here. So it's a good deal. It works. So the recommendation is caution on the population and the medium household income. Otherwise, it works. That's the process. Now you have to go through what it would take to actually do the deal. And you read about it and you make sure everything works. And you got 3, 5 acres. So you got 2 acres possibly. Let me get back to traffic was a good one. I would have to go to the county records to see the actual border for the property and determine how much free acreage to expand, but that's a possibility.
What I've been
So that
impressed with, Rich, is once you zero in on a site and before you bring it to the group or to a person, you have called and talked to the county. You've usually talked to some engineers. You've found out the zoning allows and what's involved in getting, do I need a conditional use, special use? And before we ever look at a deal that you have found, I mean, all that's kind of like flushed out.
Exactly.
Talk a
It's
little
really,
bit about that.
well, it's so important. The whole idea is contributing and contributing to the community. And if I can't do that, I won't do the deal. And talking to the locals are like a hidden gem, because they know everything that I need to know. And just being courteous and open to what their needs are, and actually saying, I'm looking to complement the community. What, how can we do that? Invites them to open up and give me all the information that I need. And that is a go that's a gold mine, because they are that people want to be helpful. And especially with things like this that are going to actually impact the community in a big way. But yeah, it's a simple call to the zoning department, the town planner, or whoever I need to communicate with. And then once I do find that it is zoned and that they are open to self-storage, I get a hold of a civil engineer. I've interviewed so many civil engineers in the last few weeks because I was looking at two deals, one in Connecticut and one in Mass. And the one in Connecticut, I wanted to get solid numbers, and I did. And I'm happy that I've got those. So, but yeah, that's a good way to bring value to the end consumer or the end buyer of the property, or wholesaling it even. So that's a good segue into the next step, and that's driving for storage. So this is my I'm going to be doing a flow chart of this. Driving for storage. First thing I do is get the facility's address from Radius Plus, and I'll show you that in a minute. The second thing I do, once I get the address, I get about I'm talking about like the whole state of Connecticut. I'm looking at getting about 200 addresses, maybe 100, 150, and they're gonna, and I'll show you how I'm going to exclude REITs as well as any facility that's doing dynamic pricing. Because if they're doing dynamic pricing, they're sophisticated, and I'm not interested in sophisticated sellers. I'm interested in mom and pops. So once I get that list, I go to get the seller contact information by skip tracing. I'll be batch skip tracing so that I can economize on cost. And then I drive by each facility and I call the owner and the facility in that order. I'm hoping to get the owner because all I need is the address of the facility, and the skip tracing will give me the owner's name and number and hopefully email and other contact information. Once I call them and I get the owner, because that's my target audience, I request to buy or make an offer to the owner. Then I log this in my seller master file just in case they say yes or no. It doesn't matter. What matters is that I have a track record of what they did say, and I can keep up with them because I'll be calling them once a month. The idea is life happens and they may need to sell. They may not want to sell this month, but next month there something happened and they have to sell. And I want to be there when they decide that I want to be the person that they can trust, value, and want to do business with. The next step is to request a random daily close. Once they say yes, I'm interested in selling. That random daily close allows me to analyze the facility to determine there's seven things that I'm looking to determine: the occupancy rate, the square footage, the GPI, the gross potential income, the income versus the economic income versus the physical income, the delinquency ratio, the as-is value, and the potential value, and then the conclusions or
And you can
recommendations.
get most of that, depending on the software, you can get all of that just from a random daily close, can't you?
Yes, exactly. That's the beauty of this. It's non-intrusive to the owner. They always, if they have software, they're going to have a random daily close, and that's easy for them to get to me. It's not asking for a P&L or a balance sheet or taxes or any of that other stuff that normally people want to see, banks particularly. Now, once I determine the value, the as-is value, and the potential value, that will give me the ability to create a deal structure, meaning give them, I'm going to like give them a cash offer, give them owner finance and a small down payment, and then two or three more owner finance down payment options. And there's going to be a letter that I'm going to write with those options in it, and I will be delivering that letter to the owner. And if they agree, we sign a contract, and then I either close or I wholesale the deal. Flow chart. This is an old flow chart. And this isn't me, that's Mark. That's how he looked when he was a kid. Sorry, I had to joke about that. And but I'm going to flow chart each step so people can learn how to do this process, because it's not rocket science. It just takes time and gas, relationship building. Once I get the whole state of Connecticut. Now look at this. This is Connecticut, and every one of these dots, let's put the filter on. So let's do this. This is a good thing. Let's say that I'm looking for Connecticut. I'm gonna do just a section of this, meaning I'm not gonna do the entire state. What I'm gonna do is just a small section, and you can take that as being the state or whatever size you want. You go to this little wheel here, and you go to the custom polygon, and I'm going to set the filter square footage. I want like 40,000. I can go to 50,000 or less. I want 50,000, 55,000 or less. The year built, I want it older than 215. The number of stories, I want single only. I want to get rid of, this is the filter for development sites. I want to get rid of planning, permitting, expansion, under construction. I want to get rid of those. I don't want anything new. Expected completion dates, I don't want any of this either. Expected start dates, 26 facilities. And I'd already done all that. And then I would do this and generating report, please wait. And then it just took my report up to here. Okay, now I don't care about the pricing. What matters to me is this address. This is the most important thing right there. That guy. That's the facility's address. That's what I'll be using for skip tracing. The name and the address are what I'm looking for. And because that address will, when I skip trace it, I will get the owner of that address. And that's all I'm looking for. All this other stuff I'll be taking out, but that's the beginning of my master seller sheet, which I'll have. And my master seller sheet is just an Excel spreadsheet that it goes across the top with all kinds of information, and it'll have a log of communications at the end. And I will keep track of every time I communicate, I touch them with a text, I touch them with an email, I touch them with a whatever it is that I actually use to communicate with them will be on that master seller sheet. But this is the beginning of that master seller sheet. Once I start driving, I date my drives, I date my conversations, etc.
Would you be willing, Rich? You found a facility, for example, may or may not be writing an LOI on, but you got a daily close from them, and how you analyze that daily close to come up with a value. I think it was what, 2.1 to 2.5, kind of as is, and then you had some of the upside potential laid out, subject to, seeing it. Would you be willing to share that?
Yes, sure. The first thing I do is to the right-hand corner where this number one is, and I look for rented units, 82%, 82.1%. And the total spaces is 62,200. I come over here. This is my form that I use for the 5K performance indicators. The biggest thing for me is number one, anything in red, I need to identify for a red flag that needs to be looked at and more closely. The time parameter is important because if it's only 10 months, I've got to calculate what a full year would look like. And that's important too. Depending on when this end of day date is, would determine on how I'm going to be calculating for a full year's of a full year, a 12-month period of gross potential income and other calculations. So once I get daily summary, I come over here and I log the square footage and the occupancy rate. Then I go to gross potential income or the second area right here, gross potential rents. But before I do that, I actually look at this a little bit to see if there's any problems. And there's a 92 overlock right there. That tell that's then I check the tracking items below, and I highlighted or I red flagged overlock at 20.4%. But then I go to gross potential rents, and I take the 37,389. And I'd multiply that by 12 to get the annual gross potential income. And it explains it. If every unit was rented at the street rate and everyone paid, the maximum rent would be 37,389 per month or this annual number. Then I check the square footage numbers to get the feel for the, like right here, 0.601. And most likely this analysis was done by Mark previously. I just took the wording and used it here. But then I go to the receipts, multiply that by 10, because like I said, I have to adjust for annual GPI, and I get 373,890. The actual receipts are 243,370. And I take that number, divide it by that would be the 65.1 economic occupancy rate. The acceptable is 3 to 5%. This facility has a 65.1 minus the physical 82.1. There's a 17% discrepancy on the economic versus the physical occupancy rate.
And
So
that's your
that,
potential upside.
yes, exactly. And that's a red flag. That's your upside. Exactly. Then I'd go down to unpaid charges right here. I take that 21,597, and I divide it by the a monthly GPI. I get 57.8%, which acceptable delinquency ratio is a 5% or less. That's another upside. And you can see that they have things out 181 days, and that's where it's explained here about the payment plan, never to have a payment plan. 90%, 90 to 97 units are being bottlenecked with payment plans, and that's an upside. To get the as-is value, total receipts, the 27, that's right here, 273,215. You take that minus the 1869.44 rent taxes equals $255,047. Now divide that by the 10 months to get the monthly income of 25,505, then multiply that by 12 to get the annual of 306,60, and then minus the 38% operating expense, you get a hundred of 116, you'll get 189,757 NOI.
So that
You you
38% is just an estimate on the operating expenses based on what? The size of the project?
yeah, and normally you'd have more ability to get ideas on the taxes, insurance, and anything else that the owner is able to give you, educated guess on the size of the property. But to get more detailed information would make this more accurate. You take that 189 757 and you divide it by 7% to get an estimated as-is value of 2,071,000 or 2.71 million. At a 7.5 cap rate, it would be 2.453 million. Now that's the as-is.
Yeah, the potential of the basically to calculate, you could take that gross potential income, let's say at 85% economic occupancy, and take your 38%, and that would tell you what your NOI is, and the difference would be your potential upside.
Exactly. And I have that on a document. But this is just to give you a rough idea of how to take this document, one page document, daily close, and be able to get an as-is value as well as a potential value. And the potential is the 17% economic versus a physical occupancy and the delinquency ratio.
One last thing I'd like to ask you, because I've been very impressed with how you did this. There have been some people that you've worked for, and they would say, "Oh, I want to be in Alabama, or I want to be in Pennsylvania or Maryland. Can you find me where some opportunities to develop might be?" And like that list of potential counties and how you organize that, and you could either zero in on specific pieces of land, or you could do that research and then give it to somebody else to let them take your research and find their own opportunities. Would you be willing to show like state or a part of a state where you've done that and what your spreadsheet looks like?
So the best way for me to demonstrate that, the poverty level, the medium household for the city, and the medium household for the 3 mile radius, is those are two important numbers. 100 for Andover, it's $100 for the Andover city, but in this 3 mile radius, it's 113. That tells me that I have a better medium household income than the whole city, that I'm in a good area. This one has the city is 71, but it has 122 in my 3 mile radius for this particular area that I'm looking at. The population for a 3 mile is here and a 5 mile, because these are rural areas. I can go to 5 mile and possibly even 10 at time. These numbers show
So that
me,
17 is 17,000.
yes.
Okay.
And
And
this
then
is,
under the NCC, that well, those are 10 by 10s.
yes, all these are 10 by 10s. This anything in red is something to really look at. This is zero in a 3 mile radius. You have zero per capita, no facilities in that 3 mile radius, and you have 17,000 population, and you have great rents. That is somewhere you want to look for a
How did you
property.
determine the rents if there were no facilities? You went to a larger 5 or 10 mile to get what the rents were?
Yes, that's what you have to do. You got to go out of your 3 mile radius until you can get some rents. Sometimes I can't, like here, I couldn't get the rents because there was none on a 10 mile.
So if I came to you and said, I want you to take the northern part of Kentucky or the eastern half or western half of Kentucky, organize the counties and let me know which counties I should be looking at for self-storage land, you would be able to zero in and tell me that.
Sure. Out of these 21, there would only be one, two, three, four, five, six counties that I would recommend. And some of the towns are prohibited. I call the zoning up and they say, yep, we don't accept them. And that's good to know, so I don't waste time.
That's awesome.
And that's
And
why I prefer calling the town planner over the broker a lot of times, because the town planner, they speak my language. Brokers are looking to sell. Don't get me wrong. That's a good thing. But that's not always what I want. I want information. And the town planners are no nonsense. We cut to the chase. Here it is. Thank you.
I appreciate your willingness to take your time out and share with people your processes for prospecting for different types of storage opportunities. And what I'd really like to acknowledge you for, Rich, is a couple things. One is your ability to think through a process, systematize it, and then execute on it. I think your ability to one, your work ethic, and two, your ability to systematize and then notarize what you're doing in such a way that other people can do the same thing if they choose to. Really appreciate that. Also, I like you are generating deals that are way more deals than people in the inner circle, for example, can do. If someone wanted to reach out to you and had if you control a deal to wholesale out, and somebody out here today would be interested in seeing what that those deals are, how could they get on your email list?
Good question. The first thing I do is everything's in the cloud. Everything's on Google Drive. So I would be able to use a share link of my directory for potential buyers to look at all the data. And
How could they
that'll be an
get on your
advantage.
list? Would they email you?
Yes.
What's your email address?
Rich.digitalcurrency@gmail.com.
Rich.
Rich, R-I-C-H dot digital. Currency spelled out at gmail.com.
Okay, and they can get on your list. And if someone wanted you to actually, let's say, find land opportunities and you do that research for them, you can do that as well.
Yes, and
Okay. My experience is Rich will usually charge a fee for that. He's just flexible on how he works with people. We definitely in the inner circle utilize Rich's skill to help hone in and find deals and opportunities to look at and write letters of intent on. Anyway, the goal of this today was to share Rich's processes, how he thinks, and you can either emulate what he does or reach out to Rich if you don't want to take the time to do it. Anything you'd like to say in closing, Rich?
yeah, it's I'm having the time of my life being able to work with Mark and the team in the Inner Circle. It's been the most exciting adventure I've ever experienced. There's a lot more to learn and there's a lot more to share, and I'm open to both. And it's a lot of fun to be able to be with people of like mind.
Well, thank you so much for being on here, and I hope this has been of help to you as you go out and find your next self-storage opportunity. So thank you very much, Rich.